on how to participate. So everyone's microphone, other than myself, Mr. Spate, and Mr. Sides from the Oro Valley Legal Department, will be, our microphones will be turned on, but everyone else's will be turned off. This is just so we don't have any interference and feedback, and we are able to run this meeting as efficiently as possible. If you wish to address the commission on any agenda item, when it comes up, I will tell you the appropriate time to do that. And to be able to do that, if you are on a computer or any type of just not calling in with a phone, there is the participants button at the bottom of your screen. And if you click on that, it will bring up a list of everybody in this phone call. And you will just click on your name, and then there'll be a little icon that's a hand raised. And if you click on that, it will notify us that you have a question or a comment that you would like to share. And then I will call on you and unmute you on our end, and you will also need to make sure that you are unmuted on your end as well. So there's a double mute there where both parties will need to unmute in order for that to work. And then if you are calling in on a phone, from a phone, and you have a question about an agenda item or would like to make a comment, you will need to press *9 to raise your hand. All right, so as with all commission meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes, and a timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you respect the 3-minute limit. All right, at this time, I'd like to do our call to the audience. During this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meetings Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda item, or respond to criticism made by the speakers. However, the commission may not discuss the matter raised during call to the audience. So if you wish to address the commission on a matter not on the agenda, please notify us now by clicking the raise your hand button. If you're on a computer, or if you are on your phone, by pressing *9. So please do that now if there was anyone that had any comments. All right, I have one that has come up, Gary Banganosh. I am going to unmute you. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Gary, you've got your time now.
Bagnosh. actually, I had submitted for a blue card, and I had expected to speak, but I wanted to withdraw, and in the interest of keeping your meeting as efficient as possible, I was going to withdraw that. But what I was going to speak on was the proposed rezoning and conditional use permit at Oracle Road and Suffolk Drive. So I will, and I know that that has not been submitted to you yet, so I will wait to the appropriate time to offer my objections to that project.
Okay, great. Also, please feel free to email your objections to any of the town staff through the website. That is another way you are able to reach out, and they will send those any of those emails to the commissioners with the packet that we get when that does come up on our agenda.
I have taken that step, and also I am an Oro Valley resident. I hesitated to say that.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
All right. Did you have anything else?
No, ma'am. Thank you very much for the time.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Okay. So I do not see any other hands up. So at this time, I will close the call to the audience. Is Melanie? I'd like to introduce Melanie Barrett, our Vice Mayor Melanie Barrett. And turn the time over to her for our council liaison comments. Melanie? Or Mrs. Barrett?
Thank Vice you.
Chair. Oh boy, sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I'm glad to be here this evening and to see you. I just wanted to provide you some updates on the past council meetings that we've been having and some items that the commission has heard and the council has also heard. On June 3rd, we approved the 2 Oracle Place Master Sign Program and the PAD text amendment and CUP to allow grazing in Stone Canyon. June 17th, we had Stone Canyon request for a plat amendment. July 1st, there was conceptual architecture for the Push Ridge Christian Academy multi-purpose building. And those recommendations that you forwarded to council were all approved by council. Our upcoming council meeting is on July 15th. We're going to hear a number of planning and zoning related items, including economic expansion zone code amendments, commercial and tech park code amendments, comprehensive annexation strategy, which we had a study session on July 1st, and a primary employer incentive program, which we also had a study session on July 1st. So we'll be hearing those. We'll also have final budget adoption and approval on July 15th. And we've been in the middle of a busy budget season with all of the changes and things going on with the pandemic and otherwise. So that's pretty much what we have on tap. Council will be on break for the month of August and we'll return on September 2nd. So thank you.
All right, thank you, Vice Mayor Barrett. We appreciate your time and attendance. We will now start with our agenda items. Mrs. Ancona, will you please read the first agenda item?
Review and approval of the June 2nd, 2020 regular session meeting minutes.
Thank you. Did anybody have any comments on that? Any commissioners? If not, I will ask for a motion. Commissioner Hurst?
I'd like to make a motion to move to approve the June 2nd, 2020 meeting minutes.
Thank you. And can I get a second? Commissioner Bergsma?
Yes, I'll second the motion.
All right, thank you. Mrs. Ancona, can we please get a roll call vote?
Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington? I think he's muted.
There we go.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right. Thank you very much. Will you now please read agenda item number 2?
Discussion and possible action to initiate a zoning code amendment to update the required findings for a variance to ensure compliance with state law.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Sims will be the staff presenter on this, so I will turn the time over to her. And her microphone is on.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. So I don't have a formal presentation with PowerPoint slides for you this evening, but just a little background on this request is we are asking the commission to initiate a code amendment to allow staff to review and update the criteria for variances. The criteria has not been updated in quite some time, and we did have a recent case that triggered the need to review and update the 5 findings to make sure they're in conformance with state law. So initiation of this request will direct staff to review the state law requirements with our 5 findings and update them appropriately. If initiated, we will be bringing that code amendment back to the commission for consideration and recommendation to town council. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. So if anybody has a question, any of the commissioners have a question, please raise your hand. We're not going to spend too much time discussing this, because we will, this is just basically giving the town permission to go ahead and initiate the code amendment. But I see Commissioner Bergsma, you've got a question. You are unmuted.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Ms. Sims, has there been a change to state law recently that would put our present findings requirements out of compliance? Or why is there a belief that we need to be reviewing this at this point?
Thank you, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma. So the initiation will allow us to review that exhaustively, the state law requirements. However, we do need to review the wording of our findings to make sure they're in compliance. There have been recent cases for variances that have shed more light into the intentions of the state law findings. So the initiation will help us review those more thoroughly and make sure we're in accordance.
So this is based on case law, recent case law that requires you to reconsider what state statute requires.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Right, were there any other questions from commissioners? I'm not seeing any, and this is not up for a public hearing until it comes back on our docket after the town has prepared. So I'm going to, at this time, ask for a motion. Commissioner Bergsma?
So I move to initiate the zoning code amendment to update the required findings for a variance to be in compliance with state law.
And then Vice Chair Harrington, will you second?
I will second that motion.
All right, thank you. Ms. Ancona, will you please do a roll call vote? We've got the commissioners unmuted.
Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst? He's muted. Oh, there you go. Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Ancona. Will you please read our third agenda item?
Okay. Continued item, public hearing. Discussion and possible action regarding a proposed code amendment to the noise abatement standards only for new and specific land use types and separation requirements for convenient uses of the zoning code.
All right, thank you. I am going to turn the time over to Mr. Spaeth for the staff presentation on that.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen here so everybody can see our presentation. All right. So thank you again, Chair Gamble, members of the commission. Of course, my name is Michael Spaeth, principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. The purpose of this presentation and this item is to again consider a code amendment to the town zoning code. Obviously, it was on the agenda in June before the Planning and Zoning Commission and was continued to this meeting tonight. As I go through my presentation, I am going to take some time to explain in more detail the nuances of the zoning code, as well as touch on some of the questions and comments that we received during the June meeting. So just to remind everyone, the amendment has two related components or parts. The first is to update the town's noise abatement standards. This amendment is included on both the town's strategic plan and the planning division work plan. In fact, it has been on the planning work plan for some time. I know there was a question during the previous meeting about, you know, where was the need or where was it coming from to update this particular section of town code. And again, I would like to just reiterate that it has been on the planning division work plan for some time, though we have recently been dealing with some noise complaints for a business in the Oro Valley community that highlighted again some of the difficulty with the current standard today, which I'll get into during my presentation. The second component or part of the amendment relates to the separation requirements for convenience uses. So during my presentation tonight, I'm going to go through both parts. I'm going to discuss how the two components or parts will be applied in real-world applications, and then finally provide a summary and staff recommendation for the commission. So as far as part one goes, the noise abatement portion of the amendment, the existing standard is unreasonable. Again, we found this out in a current case that we have been dealing with here in town with some noise complaints. So currently, the existing standard, the existing code requirement, as shown on the screen, is for noise not to exceed 40 decibels at the property. As you can see on the chart here with our little yellow box, 40 decibels is a essentially equivalent of a soft whisper at 10 feet, which is a standard that is applied all across the board, regardless of use. And so, you know, a standard of 40 decibels for a standard commercial type use or restaurant is clearly impractical and unreasonable. Secondly, again, as I just mentioned, that standard of 40 decibels is the requirement regardless of where the noise is located. It's a one size fits all that doesn't really fit every situation. It's overly simplistic. It does not take into account hours of operation, the type of use, or where that particular use is located and what the context is. The proposed amendment does account to some degree for these variances. And we think it is a definite better approach than having just a one-size-fits-all standard that is entirely unreasonable. Just some background on the noise code amendment. We at staff have been working on the development of this amendment for about a year and a half. You know, initially we researched other jurisdictions in southern Arizona, and of course we could have just copied some of their standards. But when we were looking at some of those existing standards in other cities, we found that it didn't really seem to appear that any of them had put a large amount of effort into developing a code that had a lot of background and detail supporting, like the proposed amendment we have tonight. So we've been working on this for about a year and a half because we essentially started at ground zero to develop the proposed language that we think will serve as a template for those other jurisdictions in the future. One of the questions that we got during the June meeting was that this attachment, the box shown on the screen, is also an attachment in your staff report, wasn't quite an apples to apples comparison. So we have updated the figures in the proposed amendment column to be more similar to the standards that are shown for the other jurisdictions on the screen. So just wanted to make sure that folks were aware of that. As you can see, in most cases, the proposed amendment standards are less than some of the surrounding jurisdictions, though they are similar to Tempe and Gilbert, etc. So in starting at ground zero and developing the code amendment, again, we enlisted the services of an acoustic engineer, Dr. Lance Willis, who is with us this evening to answer questions if necessary. We enlisted his services to, again, help develop a more realistic and practical noise standard than the existing code we have today. Dr. Willis not only helped us to develop the proposed code language, but also the accompanying technical bulletin that was referenced in the staff report that will be used to establish a standard for generating noise studies when they are required per code. Second Again, staff conducted that thorough analysis of the jurisdiction shown on the screen. The proposed amendment that we will see in the next slide in more detail is more in line with the other jurisdictions than the existing 40 decibel standard code. And again, we feel with the background research and the amount of time we put in with Dr. Willits's help that these numbers are truly right-sized and are based off national standards that are used across the country and throughout the world. And again, can really kind of fit that bill of being a model code for other jurisdictions down the road. Lastly, myself and Dr. Willits conducted several site visits to evaluate these proposed standards. We visited both a drive-through restaurant as well as a venue with live music. And the new standards are certainly much more reasonable compared to the 40 decibel requirement of existing code today, but they do, though they're more reasonable, they do still protect adjoining property owners based again on the type of use that's generating the noise, what time of day the noise is being generated, etc. As for the proposed amendment, I know another question we had during the prior meeting was some confusion about how these standards would actually get applied and when would they be applied. So I just want to take the time here to reiterate and make very clear that these standards are for new development only. Any existing use that's already out there or any existing use that's already been approved but not built yet would not be subject to these requirements. So the table on the screen will be used to evaluate these new development applications as they come in when there is a required noise study. As you can see on the screen and then the comparison chart on the right-hand side of the screen, again, the new standards are certainly more realistic and enforceable than the existing 40 decibel requirement in the code. You can tell again that they're broken down based on the type of use, the time of day, and are certainly no longer a one-size-fits-all approach as the current existing code is today. There are some exemptions to these requirements, of course, for things like emergency vehicles or town events, among others. And again, we just feel that the proposed code amendment with the standards shown on the screen are certainly more realistic and reasonable than the existing 40 decibel requirement in the code today. Another question that we had during the previous meeting was an ask to see a comparison with the national standards that our proposed standards are based off of. This table was actually in your staff report as well, and this is a table provided by Dr. Willits that shows national standards for noise for a variety of land uses based on the decibel level. You can see portions of it are compatible, marginally compatible with sound insulation, or completely incompatible. And I've put the or overlaid the blue stars on the screen for the uses that are correlated in our proposed amendment so that you can see where our proposed thresholds fall in comparison to the national standards that we use to help develop it. And you can see most, if not all, are at the edge of compatible and marginally compatible. I don't have any that are beyond marginally compatible. All right, kind of circling back again to kind of how this amendment would actually be used should it be approved. Again, I'd just like to kind of quickly walk through a quick scenario demonstrating how town staff would apply the proposed amendment. So there's really two steps in reviewing and enforcement of noise amendment. So in step one is where the new proposed code language again would be applicable. These standards again would only apply to new development. For example, a restaurant wanting to have live music is proposed. During the development review of that use, a noise study would be required. And that noise study would include proposed mitigation measures to ensure that the noise standards shown in the previous table are being met. Those noise standards are reviewed as part of a conditional use permit application, which a restaurant with live music requires. And so those standards would be enforceable as part of the conditional use permit. If there's a violation of those, then the conditional use permit might need to be reconsidered by commission and or council. So we're going through that process. We're reviewing the new development, and some mitigation measures that might be proposed could include, among other things, some increased setbacks or buffer yards from adjacent properties, potentially changing the orientation of the building so that the noise, the live music area is oriented as far away from adjacent properties as possible. Or it could include incorporating acoustic insulation into the design and building permit as it moves through that process. So again, these new standards would only apply during the new development review portion of a new use. Okay, so taking that a step further, the development, let's say, is approved with a conditional use permit, it's constructed, it's open, and there are some complaints from neighbors or adjoining property owners or whomever about noise. At this point, we are into step two, which covers unreasonable and nuisance noise. And that is strictly enforced by the town code and the police department. That is not then reviewed as part of this proposed amendment. So that's the second step on enforcement. The existing code language is shown on the screen in the bottom right-hand box for nuisance noise as reference. Once a complaint is lodged, the police department would conduct a site visit to determine if the complaint represents unreasonable noise and is thus considered a nuisance. If it is determined to be a nuisance, the property owner will need to make remedies to fix the situation, including possibly having the conditional use permit reconsidered. So again, before I move on from this slide, I want it to be abundantly clear that the proposed code language that we're considering tonight for the new code standards would only apply to new development applications during the review process. The second part of the proposed amendment is for convenience use separation. Again, I'd like to just quickly go over what is a convenience use for those who are unfamiliar with the term. A convenience use is a use by which the method of operation produces a moderate or high level of traffic and impacts on surrounding uses. So, of course, those are drive-throughs, gas stations, car washes, convenience markets, things of that nature. These uses by code have separation requirements from certain other uses as shown on the screen. For example, first, they must be a minimum of 250 feet from any residential property. And secondly, they must be a minimum of 500 feet from any school or park. While these separation requirements are certainly necessary, in some situations, they may prove to be redundant. This is where the second portion of the code amendment comes in. In certain instances, those separation requirements may be redundant when major barriers exist between the two uses. For example, major barriers could include arterial intersections, as shown in the upper right-hand image, existing or future buildings between the two uses, which can help minimize some of the potential impacts. Hillsides or other topographical features, among other things. So typically these major barriers inherently diminish potential impacts, including noise, visual impacts, lighting, and odor. So the existence of these barriers can make the separation requirements redundant. So the second component of the proposed amendment would allow town council to consider these major barriers to determine if a reduction in a separation requirement could be appropriate. Any reduction will necessarily need to consider a balance between flexibility and protecting neighbors. Now for just a quick scenario on how this might. So for the second part of the proposed amendment, let's say a drive-through is proposed for the corner in the commercial area shown on the screen across the intersection from the school, which is approximately 225 feet away. Everyone knows the typical impacts generated by a fast food drive-through use, right? Noise from an outdoor speaker, potential odor impacts, visual impacts from vehicles stacking in the drive-through. So in this scenario, again, the separation requirements might seem appropriate. However, as you can see on the screen, the intersection, in this case, Oracle Road and Linda Vista Boulevard, is a large arterial roadway. In fact, it's a state highway between the two properties. So what might be the real impacts? Well, likely they're not much considering the impact of the arterial intersection. So with this in mind, a proposal for a drive-through use on that corner, a reduction in those separation requirements from a school might be appropriate. So in summary, the first part of the proposed code amendment fixes what staff considers is an unrealistic and unreasonable one-size-fits-all standard, which will be more enforceable as part of the update. Further, it does address an item that has been on both the town strategic plan and the planning division work plan for some time. The second part provides some flexibility for convenience uses while maintaining a balance for the neighbors to any of those properties. The proposed amendments have been reviewed for conformance with the Your Voice, Our Future general plan, and they are consistent. With that said, Chair Gamble, staff does recommend approval of the proposed amendment, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. And as I said before, Dr. Lance Willis is also here to answer any questions the commission may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Spaeth, for that presentation. I'm going to open up this to the commission for any questions that they have. And I can see Commissioner Bergsma has raised his hand.
Yes, I do have a question of actually Dr. Willis initially, a couple questions, and then maybe a question of Mr. Spaeth. So Dr. Willis, well, first of all, before I go on with my questions, I do want to acknowledge that I did have a virtual meeting with Mr. Spaeth a couple of weeks ago. He initiated that, and I appreciate him reaching out to me. We did discuss some of the matters that I raised at the last meeting, and I think there actually was one change made, one small change, but maybe somewhat significant change made to the proposed code amendment that I'll get to in a moment that resulted from that discussion. But basically, I want to, in asking this question, emphasize that when we're talking about applying these standards, we're talking about applying them to a proposed use, not to an existing use. So you're not measuring what the noise impacts would be of an existing use, but sort of a speculative process. And as a result, on page 2, I believe, of the proposed amendment, section C under the table, it says all measurements in table 25.1A shall be represented at the nearest property line. Before, it said measured at the nearest property line. Obviously, you can't measure something that isn't there physically. So with that, I guess the question for Dr. Willis is, how do you test for noise levels from a proposed use?
Okay, yes. So What we'll do is it depends on the type of noise source that you're working with. A lot of manufacturers, for example, HVAC systems will publish sound power data that we can use to project what noise levels are going to be. For other sound sources, if the site has not been built, if it has not been graded, you know, for example, so the topology will not be the same as what it is after it's built, we'll do acoustical modeling for that. There's standards as ISO 9613 is one that we use for predicting what outdoor sound propagation is going to be like over various sites. In other cases where we can't obtain manufacturer's data, we will go out and find a similar or identical sound source, you know, same model number if we can, and we'll measure that, and we'll use that as the basis for our model. But it's really critical that you do planning before the site is even developed. It's important to have acoustical engineering in the first stages of planning of a project, so you can get the noise abatement plan incorporated into the design before it gets too far along to change it. Some design choices will make noise abatement much more difficult than others, and so we want to get involved early on to do that.
Okay, thank you. So the technical document that the town would be adopting in conjunction with this would provide specific guidance as to how to conduct that kind of analysis. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the purpose of it.
Okay, great. So I guess the other question is, we have an existing standard that's generic for all kinds of uses, requires a much lower noise level at the property line than the proposed standard. Let's say we're talking about an adjacent use as being single family residential. Right now, they'd have to meet a 40 decibel standard at the property line. And in the future, it would be at least during the day, 55 for the 1 hour average. What difference would that make in terms of the kind of mitigation that would be required for use?
Well, the issue begins with, it's really the existing code is very non-specific. I mean, it doesn't take into account really the time of day. It only applies to amplified sound, speech, and music, and so forth. So it doesn't really take into account very many things. And then other types of sound are really not regulated at all. As far as what the difference would be, we have a more comprehensive assessment methodology in this new regulation that takes into account things like impulsive sound, and for the purposes of this regulation, speech and music would be considered regular impulsive sound, and there is an adjustment that gets applied to that. So at night, the actual sound pressure level limit on that would be close, I believe it would be 40 dBA. So during those hours, during the nighttime hours, but then during the daytime hours, when the ambient or the background noise level is higher, then we're not as strict, because one of the issues with the 40 dB limit in the current code is that it doesn't take into account background noise level. And that can make, you know, if you can't measure something, then you can't really require someone to comply with it. In other words, if the sound that they're, you know, the source in question is producing is less than the background noise level, then there's not really anything to enforce, because they're not adding to the total sound in the environment.
Okay, thanks. A question for Mr. Spaeth. We talked about conditional use permits or uses that require a conditional use permit. And regarding noise, if you were to apply a condition of approval for a CUP, would it be specific to the kinds of mitigation measures that would have to be incorporated into the design of the proposed use? In other words, sound walls or other kinds of interior insulation or whatever? Or would it actually get to saying you need to comply with this particular noise standard?
Chair Gamble, Member Bergsma. So actually, yeah, I think it's both, right? So you're gonna, when you have your conditional use permit, that noise impact study is going to have to, again, evaluate the proposed sound or potential sound, and then what mitigation measures are going to be used to make sure that that sound is in compliance with the tape. And so, you know, if what's going to happen is those proposed mitigation measures, if they demonstrate that once they're actually constructed in the field, then no, in fact, those mitigation measures aren't limiting the sound to what that code requires, then that's where reconsideration of the conditional use permit might be required, and additional mitigation measures may have to be put in to make sure that happens.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. One last question. Sorry to take so much time, but I'm writing them down as prepared for the meeting. Mm-hmm. Part two of the proposed code amendment relates again to spacing between convenience uses and other uses. And there is a specific requirement that there be greater distance between convenience uses and schools and parks than for residential. So 500 versus 250. Yet we have a lower, I guess use the term lower, noise standard in proposed table 25.1A for schools and parks than we do for single family residential. It seems sort of inconsistent to me that we're more concerned about impacts from convenience uses on schools and parks than on one side, but we're allowing for more noise impacts on schools and parks on the other side. You want to address that, please?
Sure. Yeah, Chair Gamble, Member Bergsma. So no, that is a good point. And you know, keep in mind too that the separation requirements are not just for noise. Noise impacts, of course, are probably the primary one, but there are also visual impacts and odor impacts and lighting impacts and things of that nature too. So I don't know that we necessarily looked at the correlation between those two things. I mean, I think again, if you're in a park setting, I think there is an expectation that you would have a little bit more noise. Of course, you're generating a lot of noise potentially in the park itself, right? And so I would just say that it's the distinction there is that it's more than just noise impacts that are being evaluated as part of that separation.
Yeah, it depends on the kind of park you're talking about, I guess. I have some experience in parks planning, and I know there's all kinds of parks, and some are more active than others. I guess I will be a little concerned about those setting a lower standard. So that concludes my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Bergsma. Those were very insightful, great questions. I appreciate them. Do any of the other commission members have any questions? Commissioner Hurst.
Yes, I have a question, Chair Gamble, about the maximum sound limits category and how that relates to the 1 hour and the 1 minute limits sound categories in terms of the frequency that a maximum sound limit can occur during a period of time and not be considered one of the other types of categories. So if you could describe, not if I read the definition of maximum sound limits, that's of course perfectly clear, based upon the footnotes, but I'd like to have a description of what a maximum sound limit might be relative to a 1 minute sound limit, because there it's considerably higher than the other sound limits.
Okay, Chair Gamble, Member Hurst, I'm going to defer that to Dr. Willis. He will be able to give a more detailed explanation tonight.
Right. Yeah, so we have a different criteria because the human ear is impacted by different types of sounds in different ways. So a real standard type of acoustical measurement is the what we have is the 1 hour equivalent continuous sound pressure level. And that is what you typically see measured. It's basically it's similar to like a day-night level, which is used by most federal agencies for regulating transportation noise. And this is more of a longer-term measurement. We're using a one-hour measurement in this case. And that that gives you kind of an average level over that period of time. The maximum sound pressure level limit is based on a much shorter period of time. And this is used to assess the impacts of mainly impulsive sound. So we're looking at something that is producing an excursion of sound pressure above the average level for a brief period of time. And this is that's why the limits are higher, because we're looking at impulsive sound over a short duration of time versus a much longer duration of time. In the 1 minute limits, those are actually for low frequency. That is a special criteria for evaluating the impact of low frequency sound. These are sounds that could cause sleep disturbance at night, because the low frequency sound goes through walls very easily. This would be like a subwoofer or something like that. And also this would be sounds that could possibly create acoustically induced vibration. This is something you might find, as an example, in the interior of a building, you might find this with an air handling system, where it's generating a great deal of turbulence because of a turn or something before the air has had time to settle. And that will create a lot of rumble, and that can cause cabinets to rattle, windows, and so forth. So that can cause a great deal of annoyance too. So the 1 minute limits are really addressed at low frequency sound, and we're only looking at the 16, 31.5, and 63 hertz octave bands for that. And that's really what that's there for.
Could you describe what a maximum sound limit might be? Is it sort of like a horn going off, or some sort of an explosion, a banging? What would a maximum sound limit be, and what would its duration be?
Right. When we talk about impulsive sound, we're defining two categories. One is regular impulsive, and the other is highly impulsive. Difference being that a highly impulsive sound is generally a fairly short duration. It is less than the time constant of the fast time exponential weighting on the sound level meter. So the maximum level doesn't really work well for highly impulsive sounds, but it does work well for regular impulsive sounds. And those are going to be things like speech, music. It could be a car horn, that would be a longer duration, but generally we're measuring things that have a duration of less than about a second, but more than about a quarter second. Once you get below a quarter second, then you're into the roll-off of the exponential time weighting filter, and you don't get an accurate measurement. So that's why we have a separate category for highly impulsive sound.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right, thank you. Were there any other questions from commissioners? I don't see any. So at this point, I'd like to open the public here. Oh, sorry. Commissioner Posey?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to thank Dr. Willis and Michael. Mr. Speed and your team.
Okay.
On your kind of a trailblazing project I'm gathering here in a year and a half of it. And I know that was not a small task. I just, I'm mostly curious about the verbiage, about the legality of the verbiage that's in this this proposed code amendment. I'm assuming it's been reviewed by attorney or attorneys.
Chair Gamble, Member Posey, yes, we do have that reviewed by our town attorneys before we move forward with things. Yep. I should just add that we did work very closely with both the legal department and the police department in putting this together through that year and a half process to make sure that we were putting forward new language or new code language that was to the benefit of everybody. So, yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Skeet. I am going to unmute Commissioner Hong.
Hey, can you hear?
Yep.
Good. I just have when I was looking at those PowerPoint slides, I had a question. Because it had different columns, and I think the first one of them were the national standards, and then there are two Arizona state cities. I forget who they were or what they were. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not really familiar with, you know, any towns outside Arizona, but I guess there are those two Arizona cities or townships are the closest ones to that of Oro Valley, I'm assuming. And consistently for the industrial and for, I think it was multi-family use, the noise level allowed were consistently higher for Oro Valley. That is, you know, what is being permitted here compared to two other Arizona cities. And I was wondering how that came about.
Chair Gamble, Member Hong, I wanted to pull up the slide here I believe you were talking about. So,
yes.
So the jurisdictions we did take a look at, yes, the Tucson area, Pima County, City of Marana. Again, you know, it's worth keeping in mind that none of these jurisdictions have detailed explanations of where their standards came from. and in some instances, as you can see, they don't have standards for every single category. So again, we use the national standards that is used, you know, throughout the country and throughout parts of the world, of course, to help give shape and kind of form to what our proposed thresholds are. So that's where that came from. Does that answer your question?
So that's what I want to get at. So the national standard may be there, or, you know, we can average out what the national standard may be for different U.S. cities. But then, you know, we're Oro Valley, and, you know, again, it's a special place for some of us. And, you know, there's a very reason why we're here. And we would like to, if at all possible, be like the other Arizona cities than the other, you know, cities of the other states, you know, or worldly, or whatever. So I'm thinking, why can't we be as good as Tempe or Old Gilbert, you know, during these hours, you know, and for this multifamily, you know, dwellers and for industrial use, you know, people, the employees who need to be there 8 hours a day plus.
Chair Gamble, Member Hong, sure. I mean, that's a reasonable question. Again, we went with a reflection of the national standards that we have. And as you can see, I mean, in a lot of these categories, what we're proposing is actually level or less than what some of these surrounding jurisdictions allow. You know, I, for example, in the industrial category, you know, here in Oro Valley, I believe there are only two areas that actually qualify or are actually considered industrial, and would thus have industrial uses. And those, for the most part, are separated from nearby residential for the most part. So I don't know that the 75 as opposed to 70 is that unusual.
Well, actually, if I may, I'm looking at Tempe and Gilbert, and they're 60s for the industrial use, 10 p.m. until 7 a.m., and then 10 a.m. until 10 p.m. And then also for the multi-use, it's 55 in Tempe and Gilbert, and then for Oro Valley, what's being proposed is 60, and then 50. So, I mean, have you ever tried to reach out to this, you know, township or cities and, you know, try to maybe ask or find out what their justifications were when they did adopt these, you know, standards, possibly?
I mean, when I did my background research, we didn't find any of that information. So I don't have an explanation for exactly where their numbers came from, but I don't know, maybe Dr. Willis has some more insight on what some of those other jurisdictions in Arizona might be using.
I'd like to make a couple points. First of all, the daytime and nighttime limits that we have recommended in the regulation draft are the same as Gilbert, with one kind of major difference. The sound pressure level limits in the Gilbert code are actually interior sound pressures inside a structure, inside someone's house. Whereas our measurement locations are at the property line. This is a huge difference in quite frankly, that Gilbert code is very old. I'm familiar with it because I've been doing some work up there. And to emulate the Gilbert code would be a giant step backwards about 50 years in time. It appears to me it was written sometime in the 1970s, and it was revised at some point maybe in the 1980s, and it was written by someone that was really well versed in the research that was available at that time. Whoever changed it later on changed a couple things that really did not make sense, like changing the sound pressure level limits to interior limits, which doesn't make any sense. If you allow 55 dBA inside someone's house, you will not get noise complaints. You will get torches and pitchforks. No one is going to put up with that. That is a ridiculously high level. So the noise codes in the state of Arizona are really antiquated. And from my perspective as an acoustical engineer, it makes my job very difficult in resolving noise disputes because they don't give good guidance for what sound pressure levels ought to be in regard to a community response to noise. And so that's why we relied on this ANSI-S 12.9 standard, mainly parts 4 and 5, because it is a much more modern criteria for assessment, and it's based on much more research than is in any of the other state codes. I hope that puts it in some perspective.
I'm sure the staff and the engineers who have prepared this, you know, amendment have worked really hard and, you know, done the best research possible. What I would like to see here is that, you know, having Oro Valley proposal, maybe, you know, based on the figures and the standards from maybe like size or like characteristic towns. You know, here we are in Oro Valley, which is almost like resort-like, and this is a retirement community, and, you know, it's not as big as Tucson. So, you know, if we can find maybe more similar towns, and then maybe try to, you know, see what they have done with their noise level requirements.
Can I make one more comment?
Sure, please.
I have done extensive work in retirement resort communities. I've done work in Saddlebrook, many of the communities up in the Phoenix area, Sun Lakes, Pebble Creek, and so forth. And I have used this as my criteria for designing noise abatement plans, and it's worked out quite well. The issue is not as much the size of the city, but the population density where you are trying to apply the noise assessment or as part of your noise abatement planning. So that's what we're really looking at here. Mm-hmm. And in that respect, when you're looking at, you know, mainly applying this to suburban areas, neighborhoods of single family homes, you tend to measure about the same background noise level in most of those types of communities. You know, it of course is going to depend somewhat on how close you are to a major artery. And of course that's something that we do take into account, because everything is contingent on what the background noise level is. And that can have the effect of raising the sound pressure level limits. But these, the limits that we've set in here do work well in suburban areas. I've used them extensively for that purpose, and I've gotten good results from it.
That answer all of your questions? Okay, I think it did. Commissioner Bergsma.
Yes, I could follow up with Dr. Willis. So can you cite any jurisdictions you're aware of outside of Arizona that have adopted either as part of their zoning ordinance or their municipal code standards such as we're considering now that would be reflective of more modern requirements?
Yes. Well, the ANSI standard that I'm basing most of these recommendations on is a standard that has been harmonized with ISO 1996. That standard is used for the basis for the European Union in their noise planning and tracking, and they have a very extensive program of noise planning in the European countries. The United States has really lagged behind on this quite a bit, and there is one website, the noise.org or something, I can't remember the title of it now, but they basically characterize noise codes in the United States as basically copying everyone else's mistakes. This is an attempt to really break out of that and get into a modern standard of noise assessment that is widely used in other countries that have not stopped their research into the community impact of noise. In this country, there's a lot of funding. It started with the Environmental Protection Act in the early 70s, and there's a lot of research and funding that went on, especially in transportation noise through the 70s and partway through the 80s, and then it just kind of stopped. And that's kind of where we are in this country. We're about 30 years behind everyone else.
So if the town of Oro Valley were to adopt these standards, at least in the zoning code, would we be sort of in the forefront?
In this country, I would say so.
Okay, thank you.
All right, were there any other commissioners that had questions? I'm not seeing any, so at this time, I am going to open up the public hearing. And if there are any questions or comments from the public at this time, if you can click on the participants and the raise your hand button, or if you are calling from a phone, dial star 9 to raise your hand. So I will give the public a few seconds here to raise their hand if they have anything. I'm not seeing anybody, so I will close the public hearing and open up discussion for commission members only if there was anything else we needed clarification on. So if any of the other commissioner members had something to discuss or another question they wanted to ask, please raise your hand now. All right, so I am not seeing anything. So at this time, I would like to ask for a motion. Vice Chair Harrington.
I move to recommend approval of proposed code amendment based on the findings. It is in confirmation, conformance with vision, guidelines, principles, goals, and policies of the general plan.
All right, could I get a second?
I second that.
All right, thank you, Mr. Sturman, or Commissioner Sturman. Ms. Ancona, could we please get a roll call vote?
Madam Chair, if I could make a comment before we take a vote, I'd appreciate being allowed to do that. The one concern I have, and I raised it earlier, is the standard for schools and parks is lower than the standard for single family. And what I'd like to recommend with the approval of the maker of the motion and the seconder is to, in table 25.1A of proposed amendments, move schools and parks, which is in the third row of the first column, up to the first row of the first column. So that would say single family residential, schools, and parks. And one of the reasons I say that is if you look at the ANSI table that was included with the staff report, at least for neighborhood parks, the compatible standard is set at 55, the same as for single family residential. And I think that, yeah, there are parks where you can have quite a bit of noise at times, but I think a lot of people like to go to the park for peace and quiet, and that's the case for some parks sometimes. So I would support the motion with that change if the motion maker and the seconder were willing to amend their motion.
So is that I'm assuming that is an amendment to the motion. So therefore we need a second on the amendment and then a vote on the amendment first.
Okay. So that would be my motion to make that change.
Okay, so just to clarify, do we need to vote on the motion that was seconded first? And then if that passes, can we add the amendment or?
No, it's the opposite. You do the amendment first, and he needs a second in order to vote on it.
All right. Is there anyone that will second that amendment?
I'll second it.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Hong.
Now you need to vote on that amendment.
Okay, so we are just voting on the amendment, we're gonna need to do two votes?
Yes.
Okay, so the first vote is just on Commissioner Bergsma's amendment. Ms. Ancona, can we please do a roll call vote on that?
Chair Gamble?
Nay.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Nay.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Aye.
Commissioner Hurst?
Nay.
Commissioner Hong?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
And Commissioner Sturman?
Nay.
So fails 4-3.
Correct. Now you vote on the next motion, which is the one that was originally proposed with a second.
All right. Thank you so much for your help, Mr. Seidels. Ms. Ancona, will you please do a roll call vote on the first amendment, the first motion?
Chair Gamble?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Nay.
Commissioner Hurst?
Aye.
Commissioner Hong?
Nay.
Commissioner Posey?
Nay.
Commissioner Sturman?
Aye.
Okay, that passes 4-3.
Okay, thank you all for your participation and your questions. We will move on to the Planning Division update, and I will turn the time over to Mr. Spaeth for that.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Just a quick note, we don't have any items scheduled for the August Planning Commission at the moment, but just to let you know, that meeting has been rescheduled from August 4th to August 11th. As August 4th is the primary election day. So do please update your calendars to know it's the second Tuesday in August as opposed to the first. So that concludes my planning update. Thank you, Chair Gamble.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Spaeth. Can I please have a motion to adjourn? Vice Chair Harrington?
Make a motion that we adjourn.
And Commissioner Posey, will you second that?
I will second that.
All right. Thank you all so much. The meeting is adjourned. And I look forward to seeing you all next month. Maybe.